The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Have the changes in the banking industry affected you? With the looming possibility that your local bank branch might disappear and more web, mobile, and social technologies, what will the changes mean for you and your business? Welcome to Breaking Banks with your host, Brett King. The possibility that banking is no longer a place you go, but just something that you do, has become very real. Now, here is Brett King.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. Well, in the news this week, of course, has been the roundup of all the Apple Pay stuff from the previous weeks. But what was interesting, I thought, was Google has launched in India, just on Monday this week, a $105 smartphone. It's from its Android One initiative. Obviously, Google is a lot more focused on sort of bringing the internet and bringing internet access to the globe as part of their initiatives. This is why we've been talking about projects in Africa with the launch of the balloon-based internet and drone-based internet and other things, and mesh networks and so forth that Google has been trying. Of course, this is not the first low-end or low-cost, rather, smartphone that has made an entry onto the market in India. Huawei recently had a smartphone they launched in India. I can't remember the model number of it, but it sold 42,000 units in 4 seconds after its launch. So there's obviously, this is the price point, around $100 is the price point for really sort of capturing the smartphone market in these countries. Of course, we could see up to 1 billion new handsets deployed in Africa in the mobile space in just the next 5 to 10 years. This is a huge opportunity for banking new unbanked individuals on their smartphone. There's already 9 countries in the African continent which now have more mobile money accounts than traditional bank accounts, which is a great introduction for our first guest today, Costa Perrig, who's from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. You guys will recall we had Costa on a couple of months ago talking about what Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is doing around the world. And Costa, a great opportunity to welcome you back to Breaking Banks today.
Hi, Brett. A pleasure to hear you.
Now, you guys have started a new initiative, so tell us all about that. What's happening?
Yeah, so last time we talked, Brett, I was telling you about this approach we have of really fostering the deployment of digital payments platforms in countries such as Nigeria, Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, Indonesia. And one update I have right now is that we have launched, in the spirit of open innovation, a global challenge. We are looking for ideas about how to make mobile transactions at a merchant as simple, fast, reliable, error-proof as possible. It's really an open challenge. Anybody can apply. It's a pretty simple procedure. It's like a 2-page document that needs to be submitted to describe the idea. The challenge is open until November 12th, and we will select we will provide grants to 5 or 6 ideas for incubating them. These grants would be of $100,000 each. And then later in 2015, we will, out of these 5, 6, probably select 1 or 2 that we will give larger grants, possibly up to $2 million to actually fully develop. All of this, Brett, is really to foster open innovation on this critical piece of the platform, which is merchant transactions. And I feel, you know, you just mentioned smartphones. Today, these transactions are carried out on old so-called feature phones using very clunky USSD interfaces. But as you mentioned, all of that is changing fast. And I really want to foster innovation in this domain, and up to and including, you know, new business models, new technologies such as wearables. So any idea that can make this as seamless and fast as possible will be welcome.
So this particular focus of the Grand Challenges program is really on the payments, accepting mobile money, and sort of driving financial acceptance. But the program itself is not new, isn't it? It goes back to 2008. What sort of projects has Bill and Melinda Gates funded previously through the foundation?
Well, one very visible project of the same nature was about fostering invention around sanitation and providing toilets that are very low cost, and, you know, public toilets, and that very low cost that can be deployed massively at large scale. So that challenge was held some months ago in India. There was a showcase. So that's the sort of challenges that we are launching. So really, you know, relatively hard problems to solve, but that are really worth gathering a lot of bright minds around the planet to get a go at them.
And this is such an exciting time because these billions of poor people that live outside of the financial system, the barrier to entry is just getting lower, and it's just getting much easier for them to have access to this financial ecosystem now. So tell us about, you know, the specifically in terms of the Grand Challenge, how does someone get access to this? Where do they go to find out about this? How can they apply?
Yeah, so it's very easy. The idea is that a team or a person who has an idea needs to describe it in 2 pages maximum and submit that. The procedure is described. I don't remember from the top of my head the website, but if you search Global Challenge.
It's grandchallenges.org, right?
That's right. That's right.
Right. Grandchallenges.org. And then if you go into, there's Grand Challenges in Global Health, Grand Challenges in Financial Services and so forth, specifically in that area. Yeah.
Thank you, Brett. That's right.
Glad I could help. So so just to cover off the basics, it's open to anyone. It's focused on merchants, business owners, and service providers, but the grants will be up to $100,000 or more awarded. Is that a one-off, or how does that work?
So it's a grant. In other words, it's not a prize. It's a grant, and the idea is that we help the people who have their idea to actually incubate the idea to a point where it can be shown in more concrete ways and success can be gauged. So we will announce as I mentioned, the challenge will close on November 12th, and we will announce the winners of the grants early in 2015. And from there on, we expect a 3 to 6 months project with these five or six teams.
Fantastic. So that was Costa Perrick. He's Deputy Director of the Financial Services for the Poor, the SSP team at the Gates Foundation. Thanks very much for joining us again, Costa. Look forward to speaking to you more about when this launches. You can tell us more about some of the grants that have gone out.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So that was very interesting from Costa Perrick, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's clear that there is a whole lot of disruption occurring when we talk about banking in the developed world right now. It's changing extremely rapidly. And that bodes well, I think, because, you know, one of the interesting things about this disruption is that banking itself is changing, the modality of banking, particularly in these emerging markets. So, you know, we could bank a billion people over the next few years. It's an incredibly exciting opportunity. At this point, we'd like to invite a couple of players from SunTech Business Solutions who are joining the show today. I'm going to kick off with NK, Mr. Nanda Kumar, who is the president and CEO of SunTech Business Solutions. NK, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brett, and thank you for having me here.
Very good. So I know tell us a little bit about SunTech. You're a global organization. You're based out of you're based on the subcontinent, I believe.
Yeah, India. I mean, we are definitely based out of India, but we are truly a global organization. We work pretty much all part of the world, right, from Singapore all the way to North America.
Great. So currently right now, you guys are a business solution provider. You work with banks.
That's
so why did you focus on the banking industry?
Yeah. Let me give you a perspective. What, as an organization, we are focused on holistic revenue management for enterprises, specifically for banking and financial services. And we are also a player in the digital communication space. But for our conversation, let me focus on the banking and financial services. What we are doing as an organization is helping the banks or the enterprises moving into the digital, the virtual world as the business models are evolving and becoming more customer-centric. At the same time, making sure that the holistic revenue management from the organization perspective, both in terms of profitability and operational efficiencies and the agility that is required to deal with that, is also managed in a one single platform.
So how's this area of revenue management or business assurance, how has that changed in the last few years, especially with the introduction of more granular technology and metrics?
That's correct. I mean, you touched upon the very the fundamental point, the granular technology. So that's the key point. In the past, you know, but you talked about it quite a bit. The fundamentally banking is a function, but that is gradually becoming into an experience. Take the look at the fact that yesterday Apple has announced the payment, Apple Pay, and the whole of that financial experience is getting spread just outside the financial world into the other part of the organizations too. So it's no more just a functional aspect. The whole of this is getting transformed into customer experience management. That is the fundamental endpoint change which is happening in this world, which, I mean, you talk about that big time.
Sure. And the last mile.
Yeah, exactly. So the basic function has never changed in the last, you know, how many years, I mean, 200 years or whatever. It's people want to keep their money and want to keep it safe, and they want to possibly get some revenue out of it. If the common man, it is just the security of that is more critical. People who have got more value can take much higher risk, and they can get into the investment. So that has not changed, but the experience expectation has definitely changed. People are moving towards more real-time experience.
Yeah, I think it's there's just an expectation these days of real time, isn't there? A couple of weeks ago, I was at an event, and at the event was the one of the representatives of the Chicago Fed and the head of NACHA, Jan Estep, and others talking about the imperative for this, particularly faster payments in the United States. And, you know, the tone of the discussion was, this is not about what other banks are doing or what other payment, what's happening out of the payments mechanisms. The real drive for real-time expectation when it comes to payments was the fact that we can do all this other stuff real-time. You know, yeah. We can, check in at our flight in real-time. We can, text each other real-time. We can send photos real-time. Why shouldn't we be able to send a payment real-time? And the only constraint there is the banks. It's not a constraint of technology.
Absolutely. You touched upon that. You know, even let us say there are two parts also. When I'm doing this and also there is a cost to it, I also want to know how much it is going to cost me immediately, not after a month or when it's a posture on my my ledger. So it is not only that experience. At the same time, the aspect of the financial experience also is becoming part of that, what you call the product or service experience. Mm.
Tell me about who SunTech is working with right now in terms of what sort of banks, institutions.
So we actually pioneered the space way back in 2000. We started this journey as relationship-based pricing as the first part of our journey and gradually realized it's not about just one part of the end customer pricing. We also need to look at the organization's revenue management aspect, both in terms of regulatory requirements, both in terms of operational efficiency and all that. So we work with banks on an enterprise level. So we work right from customers from Singapore. We work with all the three banks, which is DBS, OCBC, and UOB, and global organization like HSBC across the whole. We are close to about 50 odd countries deployed for them. We work with large banks in India like ICICI Bank, Axis Bank, some of the new generation banks like Kotak and Yes Bank. Work with people like Mashreq in the Middle East. We work with people in South Africa like Standard Bank, Absa, and in Europe, Lloyds Banking Group, Commerce Bank, and in North America, people like Schwab. All the big guys, pretty much all the innovators in the space across the globe.
And in most of your development and operations centered in India, or are they distributed?
It is the operations are definitely distributed because the customers need local support and quick response, and this is a very critical part of their business. But yes, the product development, a lot of engineering work happens in India.
Great. All right, so listen, we're just going to take a quick break right now. We're speaking to NK. Mr. Kumar is the CEO and president of SunTech Business Solutions. He's speaking to us all the way from... Are you calling in from India today?
No, I am in San Francisco.
Oh, you're in San Francisco today. All right, great. Yeah. A little bit closer. And you're with Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficient for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking. With features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance, Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's kony.com/BK.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. You've seen or you heard on the ad before we came back. There is a dial-in number. If you've got some questions, feel free to call us. Feel free to tweet out about the show. Breaking Banks is our hashtag. And, of course, if you've missed some previous episodes, you can check out breakingbanks.com, where we have our previous episodes. And or if you're listening live, you can listen live to AM 1160 and the Voice America Talk Radio Network. So, before the break, rather, we were talking with Nanda Kumar, the President and CEO of SunTech Business Solutions. I'd like to invite Gordon Gray. He's the Vice President for Banking and Financial Services with SunTech Business Solutions also. Gordon, welcome to the show, Breaking Banks.
Thank you, Brett.
Thanks for joining us. What's your background, Gordon? How did you come to be in the banking and financial services space?
I've actually been in financial services now for over 20 years. I joined Charles Schwab back when they were making a transition into full online financial services brokerage and banking. Yep. And so I've been involved in the transition since that time in how do you actually make the systems that are delivering customer experience build relationships with customers. Right. So this has really been my focus. I was the managing director of offer management and revenue management at Charles Schwab for my last 7 years there, overseeing all offer management and revenue management across all six enterprises.
Right. You know, it's interesting. My perception is, and you tell me whether you agree with this, but we've talked for 20 years about customer experience in banking. But measurement of customer experience in the past was pretty much limited to how long someone had to wait for call resolution in the call center and what mystery shopping showed up in a branch experience. And it's only with this digital explosion that we're really looking at the entire brand experience. That's only a recent thing. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, what I've noticed is that the adoption and engagement and the transformation to customer centricity and customer experience orchestration has been much deeper and much faster in other areas in the world than in the U.S. And I've actually seen a lot of mission statements that talk about this. But from an investment standpoint and a commitment standpoint, I haven't seen that type of momentum yet, except with a couple of the most innovative players that we're now working with.
Yeah, I think in terms of why that might be, there's potentially a couple of explanations for that. One is simply that there are so many institutions in the United States that to get sort of a systemic change across the board is difficult, particularly when 70% of the financial institutions in the United States outsource their technology. I think that's a definite. Well, you've got a market like Singapore, for example, or Australia is a better example. You know, the major bank like CommBank makes a move and the other three of the big four follow rapidly because the differentiation in the market is so clear. Whereas in the United States, with such fragmentation of banking, it's harder to really call out that differentiation or have that same experiential shift on a holistic basis or a mass adoption basis. That means, of course, that, you know, you look at the United States and when we talk about mobile banking in the United States. The biggest innovation in mobile banking in the United States has probably been remote check deposit capture, which is not been a focus of the majority of the rest of the world. And it's had the effect of this weird effect of, yeah, sure, it's increased mobile adoption, but it's also elongated the business case for checks, extended that, whereas the rest of the world's been abandoning checks as quickly as they could. So it's this U.S. is a bit of a funky market in respect to some of that stuff. It's some unique things. I think it's certainly not the case that I think many in the U.S. would agree, although some might be challenged by this perception that the U.S. is no longer the most advanced economy in the world when it comes to retail banking experience. I just don't. I think there are plenty of other examples outside of the world that are. Made faster improvements holistically as a system.
That is true.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I have one other thought about this, which I'd be interested in your opinion about this. What I've seen, and Schwab is definitely an outlier because they absolutely did invest in this and have made a significant transformation already. But in most of the other institutions, what I'm seeing is a focus on regulatory compliance, or sometimes regulatory resistance, what's missing in that is the view that we're finding outside the U.S., where if you actually shift to customer-centric capabilities, then you can flexibly meet the compliance and regulatory changes much more easily. And I don't see that understanding in the U.S. very often.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. The regulatory issue and the transparency issue is one I think we should definitely get into. Coming off the back of the financial crisis, has been a real push, at least for consumers, around transparency, particularly when it comes to fees, overdraft fees, and things like that. Interestingly. Regulation is moving slower. I mean, you can just look at how regulators have responded to Bitcoin in terms of how long it's taking them to figure out a strategy in that respect. But this is a good illustration. Things are moving so quickly now with disruption of financial services and innovation in this space. I'm unsure whether regulators will ever be able to stay on top of that again. They're certainly not going to be able to stay ahead of the strategy. They're going to have to be a lot more responsive to these things. The interesting thing with the transparency angle is I think it's closely related to friction, and it's closely related to the way you acquire and onboard customers, which is why in the United States, one of the reasons for this is as friction is increased around onboarding a customer with a checking account, for example, what you've had is actually a decline in the number of checking accounts in the United States, and the product that's been replacing that is prepaid debit cards, where the friction is much lower, but there could be argued that there's a transparency component to prepaid as well around overdraft fees and so forth, where they just don't have those fees, or it's one fee per month and that's it. It could be argued that there is sort of workarounds to transparency and the regulatory friction already taking place. What are you guys seeing on a global basis? Because you're dealing directly with this in terms of the revenue management side. How is the customer experience, or more importantly, the ability to generate revenue on digital, really pushing this forward? Because as branch activity declines and as revenue in the branch declines, we've really got to have a serious look at digital onboarding and revenue. Who wants to attack that?
Yeah, Brett, let me chime in here. Absolutely, this is definitely becoming a significant focus for most of the banks. And the fact that now not only other banks are coming into their space, it is other institutions are also taking away their revenues and profitability. So the revenue management is very key. So in this revenue enhancement, as well as revenue protection, which is already there, is the focus which they need to look at. So let me... we address this in fundamentally about six key points. One is to helping them to become more customer-centric than product-centric, which means there's a lot of internal orchestration has to happen. The second aspect is about creating more value-based, innovative product and services offered to the end customer, to the almost to the specific customer needs. I mean, ability to bring in that aspect. Along with that, you know, when you're making that kind of offers, you're making not only product experience as well as, you know, the financial experience aspect. So managing that, tracking that experience, and making sure that that is orchestrated across all channels of touchpoint. So, of course, this needs these subsystems also making use of the knowledge base which we are creating. So that's a little bit of long-term plumbing.
Yep.
Monitoring customer experience is a key thing. I mean, so this has got two parts. One is the real-time part as well as, you know, the post and the batch or, you know, online part of it. Then the key and the most important thing is the customer trust. How do you bring in this process? The customer trust. There are a couple of things which you can do. One is bringing transparency in every charge which you are charges which you are making. The other aspect is making sure that your commitment as per your offers is met.
Yep.
These are the key aspects.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of organizationally and from a metrics mm-hmm. perspective, apart from the technology, are you seeing a systemic approach where we're seeing the org chart change around this as yet? Because I think that's got to happen. You've got to start to see a head of distribution that's not focused just on branches, as we've seen before, or someone overarching that's in charge of revenue generation that's independent of product. Have you seen any org structures developed that supports that sort of model?
That's a fantastic question, and in fact, it's one of the most interesting challenges that we run into, because without the vision of the target operating model, the organizational structure that needs to be put in place to actually support customer centric, when you've got, for example, just product managers who are only incented on the particular revenue and profitability of that one product line, they're not actually thinking from a segment success perspective or a customer success perspective. And so one of the things that we do, we actually come in and provide consulting to help the banks understand what type of organizational structures have been used as a best practice from the various clients we've worked with. And so we absolutely have seen it. We've also seen the consequences for slow adoption of this when you've actually end up with KPI conflicts. Yeah. So it's absolutely crucial to step back and think about this. And so some of the transformations we've seen from an organizational standpoint is to shift the focus of the revenue management to the segment manager.
Right.
And so the various segment managers then will take on chunks of customers and use systems such as ours in order to be able to see the profitability and the net, you know, the net margin contribution from the various activities of those segments in order to manage that and make that more profitable and effective for the firm.
Now, I can see that, but you guys also deal a lot in big data. Isn't the nature of the data side of this, big data particularly, isn't it sort of to some extent deconstructing segments, because we're starting to look at the data differently rather than just, you know, 15 to 25, you know, or 17 to 25, Gen Ys who use a smartphone. You know, we're starting to see behaviors emerge that go across traditional demographics and don't fit normal segmentation models.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, so what we're now seeing, and this is, for example, with Absa Bank in South Africa, they're able to use our system to actually orchestrate a one-to-one type of offer with their customers at scale in retail. So this is something that without this type of system was virtually impossible in the past. So, but it still doesn't break the need for thinking from a segment perspective, because in essence, from a business management standpoint, to be customer centric, starting with that structure is necessary. But the next piece is actually being able to use big data effectively. And Kay, you have a point there.
Yeah. No, But you're very specific. I mean, you raised a very valid point. What is important is to understand the customer behavior. And absolutely. Just to give you an idea, let us give an example. One fine morning, one customer comes and buys, let us say, 100 check lathe. Normally, he takes only 10 check lathe. So that might be an indication that he might be applying for a loan, and this might be for predated checks to be given. So deriving intelligence like this, which can be used for on real-time interaction of that customer on your website when he comes for some information, that's the kind of intelligence which you're talking about, which we can orchestrate, right?
So that customer intelligence, responsiveness to customer intelligence is going to become absolutely key. Listen, guys, exactly. We've only got a couple of minutes left, so before we finish up, I want to talk about what's, you know, obviously you've got a lot of investment in R&D right now in this area, but where does SunTech go next? Tell us what's happening in the next 6 months to a year.
Right. We, as you know, we're fundamentally focused only on revenue management and business assurance, and we do that across multiple industries because we believe at some point there is going to be a huge convergence of many of these industries. I mean, that's maybe 10 years down the line or, you know, maybe beyond that, where it becomes customer ownership might be with few organizations. So when you're talking, I mean, so that is the future direction. To do that, we need to be building expertise in each of the industries and their behaviors and how customers are lacking to have that experience. Right. But one great opportunity what financial institutions do have is becoming the customer owner if they truly become the trusted partner of the client, the customers.
Yeah.
That right, is well, one of the areas. Yeah.
It's certainly... Owning the customer is one of these big debates. You know, does Apple own the customer now with Apple Pay? It's certainly. I think that concept is going to struggle. But NK and Gordon, thanks for joining us today. We've been talking to the team at SunTech Business Solutions, Nanda Kumar, the president and CEO, and Gordon Gray, the vice president of banking and financial services practice. After the break, we're going to talk about an upcoming event at Financial Times. It's promoting the new up-and-coming authors in the fintech and innovation space. We'll be right back after this short break.
The successful businesses of today do everything they can to meet the needs of their customers. But outdated IT systems mean that banks often struggle to offer the same level of personalized service. SunTech is working with some of the world's leading banks to help them provide the products, offers, and services that their customers need and want. Visit suntechgroup.com to find out more. That's suntechgroup.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase, and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Your bank's customers expect comprehensive, convenient, and consistent service when and where they need it. A mobile app is a great start, but with so many devices and operating systems out there, it can be hard to keep up with demand. That's why today's leading banks count on the Kony Multichannel Experience Cloud. With Kony, you can design, develop, and manage multi-channel apps from one integrated platform. Build an app once, and with one click, you can deploy it securely across all digital channels, phones, tablets, desktop, and more. That means more efficiency
policy for you and a better experience for your customers. Want to get to market fast? Explore Kony's range of ready-to-run apps, including retail, commercial, and private banking, with features like person-to-person transfers, targeted campaigns, built-in integrations, and cutting-edge compliance. Kony apps provide the framework and flexibility you need to rise above the competition. Go beyond first-generation mobile banking. Visit kony.com/BK to launch your multi-channel strategy. That's KONY.com/BK. You are listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to breakingbanksradio@gmail.com. Now, back to the program.
So right now, let's introduce Andrew Hill. Andrew's the management editor of the Financial Times, and we had him on the show a bit earlier talking, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, talking about the new book competition they've got for under 35s, a £15,000 prize for a new book. And this is Andrew's calling in, obviously, from the UK. Andrew, welcome back to Breaking Banks.
Thank you.
Now tell me, this is, you got McKinsey, you said last time, you said McKinsey sponsoring this, and you guys obviously have a strong platform. You have your book of the month and the bestsellers list, which is a well-respected list that Financial Times has. Is this competition European-focused or is it globally focused?
It's a global competition. It's for a proposal for a book. So not a full-length book, and open to anybody in the world, provided they're under 35 on November the 11th, when the prize is going to be awarded.
And in terms of the actual prize, what are you hoping to accomplish with this?
Well, we've been running a Book of the Year award for nearly 10 years. This year is the 10th edition. And McKinsey came on board as new sponsor of that award. And we decided together we needed a new prize that was going to particularly encourage new writers writing about some new and different themes and essentially writing the proposals for the future Books of the Year. It's been part of the objective of the book award to try and bring through new voices, but inevitably it's quite a big deal to be writing a whole book. We felt that a proposal that showed promise would attract attention and hopefully encourage some new people to get their heads above the parapet.
So what makes a good book plan or a good proposal as part of this competition?
Well, I think the essential thing about a proposal is that it's not just a long article. We're asking for 5,000 words for this new prize, which is called the Brackenbauer Prize. And but a long article would be great from a journalist's point of view, but from a publisher's point of view, it's got to give some sense of what the book would be like to read. So it's got to be give an idea of the style of the book, what's it going to sound like, what's the voice of the book. It's got to obviously give an idea of what the substance of the theme is going to be about and what the scope is. And also we're asking for a short section that will explain the structure of the book, because we all could imagine people who can write a long article, but we need to know that these articles will have what it takes to be developed into a full-length work.
So including, for example, a proposed table of contents, who the target audience is, how you could market the book, would those things be useful?
Yeah, certainly the contents and chapter headings, short bullet point description of each chapter. We're not suggesting that that should take up the full 5,000 words.
Right.
But clearly, the kind of thing that will give people an idea of the that these authors have thought of a way in which they can develop the idea more fully.
Yeah, it's not just the article idea; they've actually got an idea for the full book.
Exactly.
And tell me why the name Brackenbauer? What's that?
We've taken two names from the history of the two backers. Brendan Bracken was chairman of the Financial Times from 1945 to 1958. He founded The Banker, which is now an NFT publication. He was actually Winston Churchill's Minister of Information during the Second World War. And Marvin Bauer was the managing director of McKinsey, slightly later, 1950 to 1967. And I suppose both men were responsible for laying the kind of foundations for the modern institutions of the Financial Times and McKinsey, the consulting firm. So we thought it was a good way to sort of honor their memory. But at the same time, they would both have appreciated clear thinking and forward-looking ideas about the future. So that's the kind of thing we're looking for in this prize.
So tell me about some of the submissions you've already received. I know you've still got a little bit of time to run. When does the competition close? What date?
Well, the closing date for submissions is 5 o'clock London time on September the 30th. So at this point, you've not got long to get a submission in.
There's
still time, I think, to pull something together. Gauging exactly how many submissions we're going to get is quite hard. Obviously, people like to run to a deadline. They've got the time, they'll use it. But we certainly, early on, we had more than 2,000 hits on the website within the first couple of weeks, which indicates a great deal of interest, quite a lot of social media activity. And of the submissions we've had so far, there are clearly some people who've reached into their bottom drawer and found something they were working on before. But there are also certainly plenty that are looking as though they would be potentially worthy winners of this first year's prize. I mean, they're very varied. The theme of the Brackenbauer Prize this year is the challenges and opportunities of growth. So that is deliberately broad. We've had pieces about the global citizenship. Well, how does that affect what's going on? We've had pieces about B2B, business to business marketing and social media and big data. We've had pieces about emerging markets, new emerging markets beyond the BRIC countries. And we've had some quite specific submissions about individual business challenges related to growth and such things as competitive advantage, one of the big debating points in modern management. We've asked people to take the spirit of the Business Book of the Year Award, which looks for the most compelling and enjoyable books of the year on business, the most compelling and enjoyable insights into modern business issues. We've asked them to sort of take that as the main guidepost of what comes in. And we're kind of hoping that we'll get some compelling and enjoyable insights, even just from these proposals, even if they don't go ahead and develop into a full book.
Tell me about the judges involved in judging the submissions.
Yeah, we've got a great lineup of judges. Three of them are former judges of the Business Book of the Year Award. So for them, this year has been a bit of a relief because they used to have to read 15 or 16 full-length books, and this year they'll be reading 10 or so, a shortlist of 10 or so 5,000-word proposals. We've got Vindi Banger, who is a former Unilever executive, partner at Clayton, Dubilier & Rice, Professor Linda Grattan from London Business School, Jorma Olila, the chairman of Shell, and Gail Rebuck, who is the chair of Penguin Random House, the big publisher.
Yeah. Great. And how do people, just so before we wrap up the show, or this part of the segment rather, how do people find out about the Brackenbauer Prize?
Yeah, if you're interested.
Where can I go to submit a proposal?
It's all online. The submissions take place online as well. ft.com/Brackenbauer is the website, And you can submit entries there. The full rules are there. There's a podcast by me talking a bit more about the details. You've got until September the 30th. We'd love to hear from you. And we will. We expect that we'll be able to run this prize again next year with some refinements. So if you think you've missed the opportunity this year and you'll still be under 35 in November 2015, keep an eye out for the announcement of the second year of the prize.
Great. And just so we get the spelling correct, Bracken
is B-R-A-C-K-E-N. Bauer is Bauer. B-O-W-E-R.
Not like Jack Bauer.
Not like Jack Bauer, no. FT.com/Brackenbauer.
Brackenbauer, great. Fantastic. Well, Andrew, thanks for joining the show. And I think this is a really positive initiative. Encourages some young authors with a very strong financial incentive. But really interesting to sort of think about things differently. I like the theme this year as well again. So just give us the theme again so everyone knows what that is.
The theme is the challenges and opportunities of growth. But we're obviously not expecting people to write just about that broad theme. We're saying if you can find a growth area and you've got an idea about how to write about it, could be in technology, could be in finance, could be in economics, we'd love to hear from you.
Fantastic. So that's the Brackenbauer Prize, sponsored by the Financial Times and McKinsey & Company. Judging will be complete on the 30th of September, and the awards dinner is in London on November the 11th. Andrew Hill, Managing Editor Management Editor for Financial Times, thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks.
My pleasure.
So that's interesting to see Financial Times getting into the innovation space and sort of figuring out that. And it's a good segue into the shows for next week and the week after. We're always focused on innovation at Breaking Banks, of course. But next week, we have our special guest presenter coming back, Jim Morales. So many of you guys know Jim. He's been on the show numerous times. He was on a show recently when we launched on the AM band. And Jim has hosted the show a few times. He's going to be hosting from Finovate. The Finovate Fall is September 23rd and 24th in New York. And Jim is going to be talking about some of the organizations who are demonstrating there. Some of the ones that I like, I'm bullish on, Mcash, the guys who have been on the show recently, our partners Gizio and Money Desktop, who you guys are aware of. Ripple, I think, is going to be back there. Pay It Simple. These guys are looking at some stuff in the US too. There's a bunch of new startups that are going to be on at Finovate, so watch out for that. The following week after that, we're going to be presenting live from Boston, where Sibos 2014 is happening. Now, Sibos is sort of a staple. It's the largest financial services conference in the world. It's primarily bankers, of course, that go to this. It's going to be taking place in Boston on the 29th of September to 2nd of October. But one of the mainstays of Sibos these days, that has been for a number of years, is InnerTribe. And if you're not familiar with InnerTribe, you can find out about them from innertribe.com. Breaking Banks will be at InnerTribe, as will I, talking to some of the startups there. InnerTribe actually runs an annual startup challenge from around the world. They have a London team, Singapore team, New York team, basically scouring for the best new startups in innovative startups. Some of the finalists that are going to be on the showcase in Sibos at Boston: Currency Transfer, Transfer Go, Sixscape, Stockspot, Lending Robot, started in 2012, Standard Treasury. There's Faster Cash, a Singapore-based innovator who's really making some very interesting traction in India. Wallaby Financial, Sounds Australian, doesn't it, with a name like Wallaby. There's a bunch of startup people to watch there. So we'll actually be embedded at Cybos over the period of the event, and the October 2nd show will be a roundup of all the interesting stuff that's happened with the Inner Tribe guys at Cybos. So check that out. Watch for the hashtag Inner Tribe during the Boston Cybos show as well. So that's a quick summary. Obviously, it's been a couple of weeks now since Apple has come out. We're not that far away from the launch of Apple Pay formally. So if you haven't got your iPhone 6 yet, or you won't get your iWatch yet, because that's going to come out in January. But watch for that. There's lots of videos out there right now on the iPhone 6 and what's happening. But October is when the gates or the chocks come off. Probably because Apple wanted to make sure after the iCloud breaches and the Jennifer Lawrence photos and stuff were stolen that they had all that stuff sorted out. You don't want to have problems with payments being compromised in the cloud. So that's it for this week, guys. Remember, Finovate next week with Jim Rouse, and the week after we're going to be at Cybos doing the show from there. Thanks for joining us again this week on Breaking Banks, and we will catch you guys again next week. See you later.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll explore more changes and challenges next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.